Okay, can we have everybody take their seats? Because I certainly want to make sure you get everything. And just so that you feel confident, there were more slides in the first half than the second half, okay? So I will not have to speed up my language dramatically, okay? All right. So we want to take a look at the donor life cycle. All right? I'm going to ask you to think about yourself and where you donate. Don't even look at this slide. Just think about yourself. Are you an early donor to any organizations? Are you in the early part of the life cycle to some organizations? Are you a mid life cycle with some organizations? Are you at a major or a long-term donor with some organizations? So when you think about that, the reason I'm saying think about that is your experience is probably different. For your college or university, you might be a long-term donor that you've been giving since you paid off those student loans. Okay? And they're looking for a planned gift from you at this point. When you're a multi-year active person, you're in that sweet spot of multiple years of giving. And when you're early, your best friend's mom was diagnosed with XYZ. You made a donation. It was important to you. That's early. So when you're thinking about that life cycle, and it doesn't stay the same, you start over here. Does this have a light? Well, I'm not going to worry about it. You start over here with the first gift, where the arrow is on the right side. Then you make a second gift. That first year to second year is very important to hang on to those folks. And then the second year, active. They give more than once. They attend an event, and they make a gift. The multi-year active is down at the bottom of the donut. And then you move further to a major or stretch giving. When you first came in, you were a $25 donor. Unless there was something significant that happened and you up that gift. All right? So by the time you get over to major or stretch giving, that's not $25 anymore. That's meaningful. And ultimate giving would be planned giving. And when people go into planned giving, they don't stop being an annual donor. They do both. They still know that you have an operation, that Susie's life still needs to be saved today. And they're worried about Susie in the future as well. So you go into identification, cultivation, solicitation, acknowledgement, engagement, and stewardship. So when you're thinking about your life cycle as a donor yourself, and your donors, you have to think about where are they on this plot. Where have you mapped them so that your moves management, we know about moves management, okay? It means if we're thinking of this as a game, it's a game board. Where are they? Are they over here? Then you roll the dice. And you hope they make a second gift, correct? We're moving them. Moves management means strategy that is intentional to move a donor and a relationship around the game board. That's all moves management is. It's language that philanthropy likes to throw around. Now, it is intentional. You need to set your strategy. You need to be intentional about what happens after you get a second gift from someone. In your thank you note, do you say, thanks so much for returning as a donor so that you recognize I'm a second year donor. Amazing grace, you're paying attention to me. That matters to me. It's intentional. Down here, what's happening? Am I invited for a tour of your new program? Am I told something about a report that's important for your industry that impacts how you do what you do? Am I engaged in some way? When I get over here and major and stretch giving, am I taken to coffee? Do I sit down and talk to you? Face to face? Yes, we break bread. Ultimate giving, same thing. All right? It's very intentional. You don't say, well, they're 65 years old over here, or they're 70. I sure in the heck better ask them for a planned gift. How rude would that be if you never had a conversation with me before? I think that would be failure. Please don't do that. Okay? Now, if you have a bunch of people in that age range, maybe you invite them to a party so that they learn about your organization and have reason, motivation to give more. And then you follow up with me individually and we sit down and chat. And you invite me back so I see your program in action. Does that make sense? Did I just demystify moves management for you? But was it very intentional? Yes. Does not have to be crazy complex. And it is, we are in St. Louis, so if I have the sniffles, I'm not sick. It's allergies. Remember I planted hostas on Sunday? We are in the allergy mecca of the world. So this is just an infographic. And I think it's very hard to read. Now, why did I put it in this slide deck? Because I like the slides. And it says, watch out. You can have a recurring donor slip down. Why? What was the motivation? What happened? You can have a donor all of a sudden jump up. Why? What happened? You can have an advocate get unenthused. You can have someone become more enthused. That's why I like this graphic. That's all there is to it. As much as we like to think we are these masterminds setting strategy and that it's all perfect, there's always surprises. It's called human behavior. Okay? Now we already took our break. So we're gonna slip right through here. Why donors give? Now you know the number one reason, right? They were asked. That's where it all begins. They believe in your mission or what they think your mission is. You know, I think, and that's always a little tricky. My niece says to me, Aunt Pat, some things are just tricky. I go, yes, hon, some things are tricky. And what happens when someone thinks they know what your mission is, but really, you can't just accept that donation. And that's not authentic. That's not honest. You need to say, this is what we do. Oh, well, tell me more. Okay. They have a desire. Now, these are like psychosocial reasons why people give. So you want to tap into those things. They have a desire to make a difference. I love this next part. They do not want to be powerless in the face of need. How often have we felt powerless in our lives? Donors don't want to feel powerless. They want to be part of the solution. It could be a family tradition where the family gets together and decides, where are we making our donations this year and why? So that elders are teaching younger family members about giving. It could be religious custom, religious beliefs. They feel a sense of closeness to those with similar beliefs and values, Millennials, big time motivator. Big time motivator. I do not think my parents had that need. They came from an old school that said we give because we were given to. You know, we give back. We're part of the community. They want to leave a sustainable legacy for the next generation. Think about it. Rockefeller established libraries. Where would we be? Libraries, universities, organizations, science, your own organizations. They want to leave a legacy for the next generation. They have been blessed and wish to share and give back. They want to be seen as a leader. Sometimes there's a little ego in here. They want to be seen as a leader or a role model. And that isn't always a horrible ego nasty. When we say ego, we kind of go, It doesn't have to be. They may understand, what does leadership look like in this situation? It means I give. Do I go public with my gift? I might not want my name, but I might want to be at an event where we talk about the why. Okay? That may be what the leadership looks like in that situation. They may need the name. You know, don't freak out about that. But I'm just saying, what does it look like in each situation? You can have naming opportunities. Donors act from the heart, not the head. Don't throw them 9,000 data points. They're like, ooh. We save Susie's life. When I said that, every one of you looked at me like she's got it. If I had said, Susie is one of 9,000 children that have been sex trafficked in 14,000 communities across 29 states, did I lose you? Okay. So think about how you're doing that. Appeals need to be more than numbers and pie charts. We love our pie charts. They need to touch lives. Picture of Susie. What was Susie? What is Susie now? Giving is a personal act. I think we need to feel honored that we are part of their work. It is truly a calling. We need to respect that. The appeals need to be donor-centric. Why should they care? And this is where you get to preach. And you can almost, when you're writing your copy or thinking about it, you should care that Susie has a productive life, that Susie is now engaged in her community. She finished college. She's being a nurse. She's being a lawyer. She's being a rocket scientist. That's why you should care. We just thought Susie was disposable. Another number. Another statistic. Nope. That's how much passion you need to bring to your work. Lives changed, the before and after. All right. This next one is fun. Who knows the author of that song? You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. Kenny Rogers. Who said it? Good. You get one of the articles. You can come up right now and go grab one. Okay. Kenny Rogers. But you picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. I was trying to make budget. Thank you very much. So why did they leave? They didn't feel appreciated. And we don't know what appreciation looks and feels like to everybody. And when we're cultivating major donors, we need to ask them, how do you want to be thanked? What's important to you? Don't assume. You may have your process, and please do have a process, but ask. Don't go public with someone's gift until you've asked. They might not want to be public. They might not want to be anonymous, but they might not want to be public. So ask them. They weren't asked again. How many of us have not asked someone to give again? We've all done it. If you do not raise your hand, you're fibbing. Or you ask them too often. Please go away. They gave to another organization. Do not feel offended by that. Lives change, priorities change. How many of us have stopped giving to one organization? I have. Does that mean I don't care about them? No, I want them to do well, but other priorities are in my life now. I might come back to that. I might not. They feel disconnected from the organization, that their gift didn't matter or it wouldn't be missed. I only gave you $100. What difference does that make? Okay. If I don't rescue that, shame on me. If I don't say, Hank, we missed you last year. I mean, really, go after those lapstoners and tell them, we miss you. Your $100 helped us save Susie's life in this way. It's so important for you to return to supporting us. It's bold. He's not going to be offended. He's going to say, my gosh, my $100 matters. Are you practicing that? Are we going after our lapsed donors? Are we telling them that we know they gave $100 last year?
How's the best way to approach them?
A letter. Yeah. And actually, you can do this through lots of donor segmentation. It can be an automated process. It doesn't have to be, you know, each one. But you can say all lapsed donors, and they can populate. Automation can do a lot of this. But you need to have a strategy to do it. And you need to insert their last gift. And if Hank has given $100 for 5 years in a row, you also need to say, Hank, we've appreciated your gift for the last 5 years. Would you consider a gift up? Are we asking people to upgrade their gifts? In the mail, yes, it's okay. What level? You got to figure out your comfort zone. I tend to not pick perfect numbers. Don't go with $125. Say $135 will allow us to do what? Always talk about what the gift does. Now, I'm probably not going to write a check for $135. I'm probably going to write a check for $150 if I upgrade my gift. I was suggestive of the upgrade. So life changes, illness happens, employment changes. Some people die, they relocate. You ask them to come back. So some of the things to win them back. Can you ask all the lapsed donors over $100 to have lunch with the CEO? Novel concept. Get them all together. And you're like, no, that's a bunch of losers in the same room. That's not such a good idea. And why not? They gave you $100. They don't know what's going on. It's time for the CEO to give them an update. Give them a reason to care. Tell them you miss them and you need them. And their support more now than ever. You must have a sense of urgency. Now. I need your gift now. Appeal to them in a special way. So when Steve and I were talking, he said, you know, I think I need to start taking my donors to lunch. And I didn't say, well, if you've never taken them to lunch, now you're going to start, we need to talk. But, you know, I kind of did say, well, yeah, maybe we can move into that. And I said, it's like a courtship. It's like a dance. It's a relationship. Okay. Footloose was a really fun movie. You know, the music gets you tapping your toes. So, courtship and the dance with donors. Why is fundraising like courtship? We've all probably either been courted or courted. And I think it's a whole lot like fundraising. Courtship is the period of development towards an intimate or long-term relationship wherein a couple gets to know each other and decide if there will be an engagement. That's courtship. A courtship might be informal or it might be planned. Some cultures have planned arrangements. Traditionally, in the case of a formal engagement, it's perceived that it is the role of the male to actively court or woo the female, thus encouraging her to understand him. Now, does this not sound like a crazy definition? And determine her receptivity to a proposal of marriage. Okay. You know, it sounds like high school or junior high where they said, would you meet Johnny at the skating rink? You know, and it's kind of sounds kind of crazy. Now, I think that fundraising and courtship have some similarities. They have honor. They have integrity. They should be fun. They should be meaningful. It's okay to have fun with our donors. They will like you more. They should be authentic. There should be curiosity where they get to know you. You get to know them. Don't tell them all your deep, dark secrets. That is inappropriate. There should be time involved. There should be devotion. Is that not what courtship is? So fundraising, the key concept that is often missing in cultivating the relationship between the donor and the fundraising and between the donor and the agency. So somebody's going to retire. We still want those donors to give to this agency, correct? It was not you walking on water that made it all happen. Your allegiance, their allegiance is to the agency. We want that continuity to exist. That needs to be intentional. There's a mistaken notion that fundraising is only about soliciting the donor and making the case so that they write a check. Nope. It's about picnics. It's about holding hands. It's about being involved. It's about hanging out. It's about hearing about their children's births. It's about their grandchildren. It's about the losses in their lives. It's about the celebrations. It's about what's everything in the middle. A successful fundraising often forms a strong personal relationship with the donor that elicits intense and meaningful conversations. How many of us have heard secrets from our donors? Because they trusted you. Now, you are not their shrink. You are not their pastor. You are a professional with them, but you are an empathetic person. And you need to know what matters to them. And they will know whether or not you have capacity to listen and engage with them. Just be mindful of boundaries that are appropriate. And sometimes that may be referring them to a grief therapist or something like that because you recognize that's not your, yes.
We have, I'm sitting here thinking about a donor that we have. She sends us $1,200 a month. Her husband is considered the richest man in Louisville. And which we are hearing in the paper, she does not have any personal relationship with me. My husband has tried as the CEO. I have sent her notes. She will not respond to us.
She's doing what she wants to do.
She is. And every time I send a note to her, would you like to meet for lunch? I just, not to ask for anything, just to get to know you, put a face to her. I know her as BS. I'm going to give her last name.
Got it. Thank you.
BS. And I didn't know her first name. I had to look up who she really was because she always signed everything BS in her last name. And, I had to figure out who she was, but every time I send her a personal note and ask to meet her for lunch, it increases. Started out at $900 a month, then it went to $1,000 a month, then it was $1,100 a month.
Well, and sometimes I would suggest you need to start working on notes that don't invite her to lunch. Now, this is the real honest to God truth. If you know that BS is also a gardener, then you sent her this cool article about gardening.
A
thought of you, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, just trying to find out personally. They have no children. They have several locations where they live. Just trying to find anything out I can from her. Even the church that she attends in Louisville, they don't even hardly know her.
I get it.
She's just that person that sits on the back row, comes in late, leaves early. She just doesn't want to be recognized.
Then please don't intrude her space. You're courting her, but I would suggest that it be about not lunch.
Exactly.
Start talking about your program expanded. Just thought you would want to know and celebrate this. You were so much a part of it. There's a huge gardening expo. I understand that it's spring. Happy spring. You know, even if she's not a gardener, even if you don't know about that she's a gardener, but it's spring. Happy spring. You know, I mean, I think you need to start thinking creatively about that.
Yeah, so I don't know if others have donors like this. I'm thinking of three people right now that just want a little note handwritten on the bottom of their thank you note. I did one later, I'm just a pen pal with.
Okay.
Personal.
Yes.
So there's probably donors like that that you guys have that don't want to meet you for lunch.
Correct. Correct.
Have a long conversation. They just want something personal.
Correct.
And courtship is really important to figure out.
Correct. And it doesn't look the same.
Exactly.
From Steve to Hank to
Chris.
Does not look the same.
Exactly.
Okay. But you can have a plan and they pretty much can align with certain buckets of strategies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right, remember we talked about moves management? This is simply a visual. It says you have a step 1 through 5. You determine your audience. I mean, this is not even a great slide, quite frankly. But it says that you have a process. So if you don't have a process, draft it. Make it simple at first. Then you can make it more complex. How many of you have moves management plans? Okay, so lots of opportunity there. Okay, you're not alone. You're not alone. Don't be afraid of it. Think about when you fell in love. You're afraid of that too, right? Okay, the golden triangle. I'm going to talk in ideals, and Steve thinks he's in it by himself, that he's a team of one. But we just debunked that one. This is if there is a board chair, an executive director, and a development director, or various titles thereof, okay? We know when a relationship is good, and we know when a relationship is bad, right? How many of you are in a very defined relationship within your team, where each team member knows where they begin and end? So that's another opportunity. Is your development process and your team defined? Not by project, but by tactic, by action. If it's not, start there. Don't beat yourself up. Just start there. Okay? If people know what is expected of them, what good looks like, they will be more successful. And you will achieve a golden triangle. If your board chair is clueless about their roles and responsibilities in the development arena, define it for them. Now, yes, that does mean telling, but it's engaging. And it's also saying in the sphere, these are all of the roles and responsibilities for us to be successful. This is how I need you to communicate with me. This is the role of the development director. This is the role of the rest of the board. These are the kinds of communications you need to have. Yes, I will draft them for you. I will give you talking points. We will have an outline. We will have a project plan. Define it, write it down. It doesn't happen if you don't write it down. It's not magic. It's being intentional. See, that's why I love fundraising, actually, because it's strategy. You all thought it was magic and the people walked on water and people just had big hearts. It's strategy. It's being very intentional at every step of the way. And you can do that.
May I ask a question?
Sure. Good.
And then focus on that. Does that make sense? How does it work?
What is the fundraising process that you dislike the most?
Oh.
True confession, it's okay. We all share skin knees here, right?
It probably was the follow-up and then the handwritten notes, which you can get better at. Does that make any sense?
Sure.
Either the grant writing at that time.
Okay, okay.
So what they were leaning towards was we would easily focus on what's easy for us, but then you got to focus on what's easy for us.
Well, John Buckingham in the Strengths book says focus on your strengths.
Okay.
All right. And it's not that you don't have to do some things that are just not as fun. Okay? But focus on your strengths. I would also suggest if it was the writing the handwritten notes, just go out and Google and say 4 good thank you notes. Okay, fine. I'm going to borrow these. And then I'm going to adapt them. Okay? Make it simple for yourselves.
Okay.
You know, if it's grant writing, can the program person help me write part of this? Because I'm not the content knowledge person about our program. Can I get an intern to help me with some of this?
Okay.
It's important that we know what we don't love.
Okay.
Because we will procrastinate it.
Right.
It needs to be part of your project plan. So it's in there.
Right. Is there a percentage of new donors that we should be trying to
contact? No. There should be a strata of donors that you should be trying to contact. And it's based on where your giving trends are. I always used to not like it when people would come in and say, if you don't have a $25,000 donor, you're not being a fundraiser. Well, sometimes you don't have a $25,000 donor. So what are the steps you take to get to a $25,000 donor? So I don't prescribe to that X percentage of your time because I don't know what's happening in your shop. Okay? That would be rude for me to do that. Okay? And yes, you do need to acquire new donors, but the question is how? And do you have a process in place for that to happen? So the golden triangle, roles and responsibilities. Yes, this is so boring, but guess what? You have to have it. And if you don't have, which many of you, I mean, one person raised their hand when I said, how many of you have defined roles and responsibilities for the board chair and the staff person? Only one person raised their hand. So you don't have it. So now you do. So these are your roles and responsibilities. Okay? And this is how you divide and conquer. And if you're a one of one, you have to think about this differently. And you have to say, well, who does what parts? And how do I bring my board chair in? How do I bring my IT person in? How do I bring my program person in? We don't have a development director. Okay, I get that. Sometimes we wear multiple hats in certain size shops. When you think about the future, you might want to think about that though and say, how do I carve out parts of this role for someone else so that I can do more of this? Does that make sense? And boards always say, we can't afford a development director. Or they think they're going to walk on water, which is bad, 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 bad. But then you have to ask the question, what are we leaving on the table or what aren't we doing because we haven't made the appropriate investment? We are not supposed to be beggars. We need investments and resources to do these jobs. If somebody said you have to do all this without a computer, what would you say? Arrivederci. Okay? That is not an appropriate expectation. So how do you need to be configured? What is the strategic plan for your growth, for the organization's growth, for the resource allocation? Those are the big, broad questions. All right. Yes, question. I'm not going to read all that because I knew you could read it.
I wouldn't venture to guess that many of us are kind of saying, like, in my mind, this is how a nonprofit should run and function. My nonprofit thinks it's a ministry. For some reason, ministries think they don't do any of that. or they just wing it or do whatever.
Are they surviving?
Somehow.
Are they growing?
Sort of.
Do they have a long-range plan?
Not really.
Do they have contingency plans?
No.
All right.
So, like, how
questions
do we,
answered.
Right, but how do we work towards?
You can be a ministry simply because you are of the cloth, does not mean that you are holier than thou and
right.
should not have good business best practices.
I agree, but what if they don't agree?
Well, then you
see
need.
What I'm saying, like,
well, you need.
I'm with you, but the board is like, why does it matter? Or
well,
my
but,
executive director is like, it doesn't matter. And I'm like, no, it matters. But
I think you need to have models that say, this is best practice, and this is why it's best practice. And if you don't have that, I mean, you can't just say it's best practice. They're going to say big deal.
Right.
And sometimes we say, those all might be best practices, and we can't adopt them all. But we can adopt these.
But there's some things you can do without board approval to maybe prove to them that these things work.
I think you also need to find your champions. Mm-hmm. I think the dance with the board is an interesting one that continues to change. And it's our job to find our champions.
Yeah, it's just the challenge.
And to help bring them in. And if you do that fundraising analysis that whoever, I think you stole that paper. And if, no, it's okay. It's a good. I said there are samples. Everybody gets, not everybody, six people get one. But you will bring key board members into your think tank, into your inner circle so that they get it. And then they can be your champions and advocates to the whole body. Correct.
About you guys, but I feel like we're if somebody has a plan, we don't have a plan, so we might as well go with someone who has a plan.
I would also say don't piecemeal them.
No.
Get their attention long enough that you're being strategic in your conversation about these things.
Yeah.
It's like showing them the map. Okay.
You got it. All right. Now I love sharing resources, and I'm sorry that you have to put all this in. But if you just, I mean, these are great resources. You can Google. Google is your friend. So The Culture of Philanthropy, great article. The Blackbaud Assessment for Charitable Giving Report, you can find it here. There's also one up here, unless it's already gone. AFP. Now, does everybody know what AFP is? Association, write it out. Association of Fundraising Professionals. They are in most communities across the country. It's a national organization with local chapters. They are a resource for you. Even if you don't go to their lunches or their lunch and learns or their whatevers, they have online stuff. We haven't talked about CFRE, which is a certified fundraising executive, because you first have to just learn some things, all right, and be a part of it. But you could certainly work your way towards that. Nonprofit.IndianaUniversity. Great resources, great information. It's just some trend lines and some good information on philanthropy. The Council of Nonprofits, I mean, I love this. Data reports and nonprofit sector. It's great information. This other one was the Plan Giving Program, a simple approach to building a sustainable plan giving. Does that not sound like most of us in this room? Okay. A simple approach. How to start a plan giving program without a plan giving officer. Okay. There's resources. All I'm saying is there are resources. Okay. And it's, I would suggest that this become part of your nighttime reading. Okay. It's good stuff. You don't memorize it all, but you start learning. Okay. I do encourage you to seek out AFP. That would be my number one recommendation to you. And last but not least, how to find me. I'm under that arch, St. Louis. This is my contact information because some folks have asked for it, so that's where you find me. Any last questions? We're ahead of time. We're good. Younger donors, we talked about them, how to get them. They want affinity, so think about that. So before you ask them for money, they need to gather around something that's important. What are they attracted to? Youth, social service, and human services. So think about your strategy around that. Can they be part of the camp cleanup? Can they become engaged as a volunteer before you ask them to be a donor? One-time episodic volunteer opportunities are great ways for people to taste whether they like what you're serving. Same thing with corporations. Can their employee groups taste what you're doing? Individual versus church. I don't have any data on this. This is my gut. Whoever asked that question, I'm going to answer it this way. We know the attendance at churches everywhere is going down. That doesn't mean that people aren't spiritual. Okay? That doesn't mean they're not seeking or building some relationship with God and some sort of community. So how do we find them? The individuals.
Yeah, so part of my question in that is how do I convince my board that that's where I need to start shifting?
Because they think you're a heretic, right?
Well, they think churches, and it's like, well, but stats.
Well, I understand, you know? And I think it's not that we're going to ignore our organized religion.
Right.
But we are going to also meet people where they are. Donor-centric means meet people where they are.
Right.
Do we engage them in a camp cleanup? Do we pray before we clean and after? Amen. That's it. Okay? Not long-winded, short prayer. Okay, you're getting my gist. Okay, corporations, how and what, we did speak to that. And I would say customize it based on what the kinds of things they talk about that they want to become engaged in.
And with corporations, I'm more and more they kind of turn away from the faith-based organizations.
Small businesses, though, are 50% of America.
Okay.
So think about it. Small businesses are privately held. It's not the Exxons of the world and the U.S. Bank and Bank of America. It is small businesses. And you are under the umbrella of, you're a church-affiliated organization. You're doing the same services that other organizations are doing that are not church-affiliated. They still care about those services. They care about their community. So think about your language. Customize your language to your audience. Okay? That doesn't mean you're not abiding by your foundation. Maintain and upgrade donors. We talked about that. We could talk about it more and more, but we did touch on that. The methods of fundraising, we talked about a lot of different methods from soup to nuts here. And somebody was the short timer in the group. And what should you be doing now? That's called succession planning with your board and with your staff. And even if you were going to be leaving in 5 years, I would say now is the time to start putting that process in place, being intentional about it. One of those patisms I used to say a lot is, a bus could run me over tomorrow. Someone else needs to know about this. Someone else needs to have this relationship. And they said, could you stop being so fatalistic? I said, okay, I could win the lottery tomorrow. Okay. Same thing. I'm out of here. Okay. And I was not a short timer kind of person. I'm a long timer kind of relationship person and organization person. But it's to be intentional about that and to speak well even after gone and they make mistakes. You speak well. Forever. So what should you be doing with your donors? I think for your key donors that you know really well and have cried on your shoulder and you have cried on theirs, you need to tell them.
I have been for a year.
Okay. Yeah. And you need to say, and this is the safety net that is here for you. You are so, the alliance back to the organization. So be intentional about that. Bring other people into those relationships. Start transferring those relationships. Does that make sense? Okay. Any other last minute questions before we close this session? Did this meet your objectives? Not all of them. And someone asked the question about databases and apps and all. I mean, you know, this is a 2-hour session. We can't cover absolutely everything. But I think you have a lot of good information based on the head nodding and about, we're not doing that. I think you have a lot of good resources to go forward with. And thank you. I hope the rest of your conference is good.
Great. Thank you.